Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started.
All right, guys. Welcome back to another episode of Side Hustle City, and as always, trusty co-host Kyle Stevie.
I am here.
He is here, and he's coherent.
Yeah.
No bourbon?
It was one time.
One time today?
I wish it was one time today. No, it was one time. I was on vacation. And it wasn't even that bad.
Well,
it was about the last 5 minutes of the podcast.
Nobody blames you. You're from Kentucky. Like, you're supposed to be, like, at least one bourbon right now. Yeah, like, yeah. What time is it? 4 o'clock?
It's pretty close to that time.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, about the last 5 minutes of that podcast, I kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Well, it's fine, Kyle. So guess what, guys? Today, we have a special guest with us, Mr. Harvey Lewis. How you doing?
Hey, I'm psyched to be here.
Yeah, so I actually spoke at Harvey's class, politics and economics, right?
Yes, it's government and financial literacy.
Gotcha.
And it was great having you. And also, thank you for returning today with the Starbucks.
Oh, yeah.
The kids really appreciate that. That was kind of you to bring that in.
Thanks. I figured they'd be excited about it. I wish somebody would have brought me some free drinks or something when I was in school. That would have been right. Awesome. One kid, she was like, I was talking, and I'm like, oh, you know, talking about Starbucks. I can't remember what the conversation. You know, I go off on these tangents. So I said something about Starbucks, and a girl goes, oh, you can bring me some Starbucks. And then somebody else in class was like, you can bring me some Starbucks too. And I was like, I'd bring the whole class Starbucks, right? And it's kind of a joke, you know? And so then I went on Amazon, well, Ryan did, and he just ordered like enough Starbucks for the whole class. And I hit up Harvey, and I was like, hey man, what if I bring him Starbucks? Like, just to kind of rekindle like what I was saying to them, like, and then, hey, there's some people that are, you know, will actually do what they say.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, let's get them some Starbucks.
So they go by period? You don't have them all day, right?
Yeah, we have like 45-minute periods.
Dude, so the teachers afterwards were probably pissed. You got these kids just jacked on caffeine.
It was early, too. Yeah, it was like 10:30 or something. Yeah.
At least not sleeping it.
Yeah. That's right.
So bouncing off the walls.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. And those kids, actually, they were pretty well-behaved. I remember when we were kids, I used to go to the School for the Creative Performing Arts, and it was in a different location. Harvey now teaches at the new location. But the kids are pretty well-behaved, I thought. I mean, when I was in school, kids would have been acting up. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, these kids are definitely really great kids. And we're right down Washington Park, right downtown. It's just a great location. They impress me. A lot of times, especially my AP government class, I feel like I'm sitting in on like a master's level class, like in the AP government.
Wow.
Class.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they have just incredible like responses to some of the stuff. It's amazing.
How old are they?
They're juniors and seniors,
yeah,
right?
Juniors and seniors. So 16, 17, 18.
Yeah. That's a good age when they start questioning. So they start questioning because they understand more. Like my sons were really like that. Just, well, why is this? How do they know this? That sounds like bullshit. That like, I don't know, man. Just you read like three different sources.
Yeah. Yeah. Read CNN, read Fox News, and then read something in the middle. Read Reuters. Reuters is in the middle. Yeah, that's right. What you should do. But so what got you into teaching?
Well, honestly, I never dreamed in a million years I'd be a teacher because I was a really bad kid.
Join the club.
Yeah, exactly. So middle school, I mean, I would just get kicked out of classes. And I really didn't start performing well in school until I was like a junior in high school. And like that was it. Like it kind of hit me as like, wow, I need to do this. And then even like when I went to college, I would never dreamed in a million years I would have been a teacher. But after that, I went into, after I graduated, I ended up selling cars for a couple of years. And our dealership shut down. It was like AutoNation. They closed them all
down. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, right.
The country. Yeah. And I took a 2-month journey through Latin America, just traveling through 17 countries on the bus, taking public buses between places. And during that experience, I just it was so riveting to see all the different highlights in each of those countries. And I felt like, wow, there's so much that I had no idea existed on this planet. And I never saw that as much ones where I had phenomenal teachers, but I didn't have that exposure. And it inspired me to want to be a social studies teacher and bring that back into the classroom and inspire my students to want to, you know, be involved, like learn as much as they can about the world. And yeah, so, and I really like working with kids. So I decided to go back and work on, get my master's degree in education. And then I started off in CPS, and I luckily enough got into SCPA, my fifth year of teaching.
The best school in CPS. Yeah. Some will say Walnut Hills, but I disagree.
They each have their specialties, right?
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, but I'm
biased.
I'm a little biased for SCPA as well. Yeah.
So, what was your undergrad in?
It was in political science.
Oh wow! So in political science. Oh cool! Political science and education.
It's like the one poli sci graduate that made it out of there without going to law school.
You know, looking back on things now, I teach financial literacy in my classes as well. I'm not sure if I would have chosen the same, you know, major, but you know, a lot of the like marketing and other areas interest me even more possibly. But I definitely loved. I went to the University of Minnesota, and it was a great place to grow.
I love your guys's the fair, Minnesota State Fair.
It's the second biggest in the country.
You're blown away.
It's huge.
I went up there just to go to Zantigo.
Oh yeah.
So me and my wife, I don't even remember Zantigo, Kyle. So Zantigo was Taco Bell, right? Before Taco Bell. There was Taco Bell, right? But dude, Zantigo was better. Zantigo invented the Cholito.
You need a reality TV show where you go eat. Because you always...
I love food.
I know. You always have, like, on Instagram, it's like your picture of this place you just hit up.
Oh, I'd go... The problem is nothing competes with Cincinnati. I don't know what it is. I mean, you got everything here. You got chili. You can't get our chili anywhere else, really. You got delicious pizza. Got Grippo's. Like, look at all the like local stuff that's so good.
Grippo's barbecue, yes.
Geta?
That was our main.
Geta, good.
Dude, I mean...
Cincinnati chili, yeah.
Oh, dude, there's no way.
Dude.
I was in a commercial, Harvey, by the way. So I got it during the Super Bowl. Like,
you got to rep it, but dude, it makes your clothes smell bad.
I grew up in Price Hill, too, and I lived behind the First Skyline. This is back when we were eating freaking saltine crackers with peanut butter. That was our dinner.
Grandpa came from Greece. It's his recipe. It's still garbage.
No. Oh, man. But we would smell it all the time, right? And now that I'm older, I probably eat it once or twice a week. It's terrible. And that's probably why I need to run like you. I need to be an athlete or something. But you know what? We're lucky to have him here today, because I bet a lot of people that listen to our show are probably wondering, in a high school, like, especially economics. Like, I mean, you're teaching economics, you're teaching politics. What is the general in an inner city school? So I'm on the board of SCPA too, the funding board. So 63%, I think, of the kids that go to SCPA live in poverty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty close to that.
Something similar to that, yeah. Right? But a school's pretty diverse.
Yeah.
I mean, diverse with everything. The way you would want a school to be, you've got, you know, every race of kids, probably different backgrounds, different from economic backgrounds, different like mindsets, different, you know, sexual orientations and everything. I mean, this is the school you want to be in if you want an open mind. Like, you want to grow up and you just want to be around everybody, right? You have friends from every walk of life.
Yeah, I mean, the school is phenomenal for really instilling upon students to like to really be proud of their individual self. You know, so I mean, a lot of times in adolescence, you know, kids just want to kind of group or blend in, and you know, our school tries to promote encourage our students to find their own character and what is their passion. So
that's awesome.
It's a neat school.
Yeah. And you get a lot of different ideas about things, right? I mean, just ideas from different people, you know, and the fact that you get to know all these people from these different backgrounds is awesome. I mean, you know, I'm poor kid from Price Hill, and you know, if I would have went to West High or Dater or one of those schools, who knows where I would have ended up. I mean, I attribute going to School for the Good and Performing Arts as getting me out of the bubble that I lived in, this bubble of like gang activity and violence and poverty. And it got me into a place where you had kids who came from money. You know, they were in from Hyde Park and all the, you know, the suburbs. There wasn't the Masons and the, you know, Westchesters when I was a kid. They didn't look like what they do now. But you had like inner ring suburbs where people had money and you had kids coming in from all those places. And then you had kids that lived in the projects. Second biggest urban housing project in the entire country was in West End of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And so you had half the school that came from there, came from Avondale, came from Price Hill, poor neighborhoods. And then probably another maybe quarter of the school actually probably came from a nice place. But, right. but you just had all these different people, but everyone was there because they had a talent and they all had a dream. And when I was a kid, it wasn't, are you going to go to college? Right. That's the question at a lot of other inner city public schools.
Right.
Are you going to go to college? Shoot. Are you going to graduate high school? It's no. What college are you going to? That's the question the teachers ask you. What college are you going to? Because everyone wanted to do something with their talent. And, you know, I went there because I would have had zero direction, right? If I would have went to a regular school, but I was able to foster my creative abilities there. And now I own an advertising agency and I've owned it for 12 years. And it you take this poor kid from the inner city and you tell him, hey, you've got a talent, foster that, use that. So and that's what I did.
So do you try out? Like, do you have audition?
You had to try out.
Do auditions?
When I was a kid, you tried out for everything. And that's how I ended up in drama. I didn't even want to be in drama.
What I'm saying is, do they look at you and I'm like, sorry, kid. You just...
Oh, yeah. Oh, dance?
You're not talented at anything.
Before, I was going to the club 4 days a week. I was terrible at dance.
No. What I'm saying is you wanted to go to the school.
Yeah.
So let's say a kid wants to go to the school. Does he have to audition or is it pretty much like, okay, you can come to the school. We got to get you to a program.
I don't know how it is now.
You have to audition.
Yeah.
Like especially for middle school and above, you have to audition. I mean, there is like the I believe it's still the only K-12 public art school in the country. So it was when it, you know, first was resettled in Washington Park area. Most of the students that come in with a talent of some sort, and we have majors. So like everything from ballet to musical theater. And I mean, there's always something exciting happening every day. Like I ran out the front door. Drew Lachey was filming something out of the front door today. Like right as I was leaving to come over here.
We used to have a bunch of kids from there. Like, cause I was a stagehand at college. So I worked at the opera doing building sets
nice.
And stuff.
Nice. Oh, you could have been a tech theater. That's what we have. The tech kids, I'm trying to get sponsorship right now. I've got a company that I work with that builds highways. And they want to be able to get into talk to these kids. And
yeah, they're incredible.
They're already working with their hands.
They really are. And the technical theater department's really strong under Brad Gerard.
I was on a Zoom with him the other day.
Tell him I said hi.
Do you know him too?
He was a stagehand. He's a stagehand. So I worked with him a lot.
Really?
It's been about 15, 16
years. Well, there you go. Small world. Welcome to Cincinnati.
It's all I'm talking about, right?
I know, Brad.
That's a trip. Okay, I'll have to mention him to him when we're on a Zoom. But yeah, he was the one saying, hey, what do you want to do with these kids? Like, you know, do you want to introduce them to, you know, construction jobs? Like, what's the goal here? Like, I mean, he was pretty straightforward too. He's just like, look, he's looking out for the kids. He's like, these kids are spending, you know, this much time in class. Then after class, they're building sets. They go home at 8 and 9 o'clock at night, and they're like, what do you want?
Right.
What else are you going to do? Like, what else are we going to do here? So, well, Harvey, so Minnesota, right? Great, awesome state fair. I ate a lot of cheese curds and a giant bag of hot cookies.
Well, it's good you were there in August, not January.
Yeah. Oh.
No, actually, Minnesota is an amazing place in the wintertime. It's record now. I think it's even down to like -62 in Tower, Minnesota. But, you know, they have incredibly cold winters. So January and February, it doesn't usually get above zero. Yeah, like a winter carnival down in St. Paul and all these ice sculptures is pretty phenomenal. You see the ice fishermen.
So you do what you can with what you got.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Well, you're right about that.
How'd you get there?
Well, actually, that's a whole nother story. But I had my son very young age. So I ended up having my son between my freshman and sophomore year of college. And I was going to Bowling Green. And I was like, well, geez, what am I going to do now? My father actually started up a business. He invented these exhaust hoses that go onto a water pump sold to Navy ships.
So he's like, making government money. He's got that government contract.
It was a component that went on to a larger, you know, piece. But yeah, it was like a consistent thing. And he had just started it like...
Wow.
Or got that contract maybe like a year or two prior to that. And he had like a small light manufacturing like little facility with like three people. And so I knew I was able to go and work for him full time and then take my classes in the evening at U of M. And so that's what I did. I just like got to like do welding and do all kinds of lathe work and manufacturing. And it wasn't exactly what I was intending to
do. But you got your hands dirty. You were working. Yeah, you were doing real work.
Yeah. It was real, real.
And he was in Minnesota?
Yeah. My dad had met my stepmother in the Grand Canyon. They had been married for maybe like 15 years before that. And it was a good opportunity. It was challenging working with your dad, like at 19.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, every day, like you better not be late or you're going to get it, you know? So
yeah, don't embarrass me in front of all the other employees. Right. I can't have this nepotism conversation happening.
No, there was only like four of us anyways, but I mean, definitely I didn't really want to get like a 15 minute lecture.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at right now. I have twin 19 year olds that are working at where I work. They do part-time. And one of them, unfortunately for him, works in my office. Mm. And so I'm on his ass all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about my father is, you know, he didn't give me any special treatment at all. Like he expected me to work my ass off. And, it's just like, okay, you know, you better not be late. You gotta be on it. So I learned a lot of principles really fast about what was expected. And, you know, it was fair, you know, so working with a parent it can be challenging, but I definitely, like, looking back on that time, I'm just so grateful that I had that, you know, period while I was in college to work with my father. You know, I'll always be grateful for that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, you learned a lot. You learned some work ethic. You did some real work.
Right.
Well, now let's talk about, you know, we talked about the kids and everything, and that's great, but that's not the only thing you've got going on. That isn't your side hustle. That's your main hustle.
Yeah. That's I'm curious how you like define the word hustle. Like, you know, cause it can have many angles too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know,
yeah.
But, you know, I think about it like in terms of like, my athletic endeavors. So, you know, you always want to hustle like 100%.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to give like a minimal effort.
Like your dad, you didn't go in and give or Pete Rose one time. He didn't run to first base when he grounded out.
Right.
He didn't run to first base. His dad met him down the parking lot after that. He's like, "Hey, I was at the game today." He's like, "You didn't put in effort when you were running to first base, did you?" He's like, "No." He's like, I didn't, Dad." He's like, "Never embarrass me in my city ever again." And he walks away. That's Pete Rose's dad. He's Charlie Hustle, right? So, I mean, hustle, yeah. You just put in the effort. Right. Put in the effort.
So, my story is kind of based, you know, I'm a teacher for sure. But where people generally know me from is my, like, athletic endeavors. So I'm a ultra runner, and this means I run races that are usually really far. Maybe 100 miles. Maybe
goodness like, gracious. Like that's like going to Louisville.
Like Badwater.
Badwater's, yeah, that's one of them. You've heard of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the races. This is my 10th year running Badwater. So I'm like, it's an incredible place. It's like the hottest place on the planet. It's 282 feet below sea level, like the lowest place in the Western Hemisphere. And when you get out of the vehicle there, I mean, it just feels like you stepped into like a warm sauna, like a really warm sauna. It's just incredible. But you can see for 50 miles, like off in the distance, the mountains are just
extraordinary. I'm looking at it now.
That would be the ultimate mind screw job. I hate running. And I used to do hills for football in college, like during the summer, even though it didn't make me all that much faster. And there was this damn stop sign. And I used to hate that stop sign because it never felt like it got any closer.
That's amazing.
Is this where they film
50 miles? You're looking at 50 miles, like I'll tell you, it's like this. Have you ever been to the mall in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
All right. So you are at Washington Monument.
Right.
And you see Lincoln Memorial. And then you realize that Lincoln Memorial never gets any closer. It's like just stays the same size for like 35, 40 minutes. Yeah. I can only imagine that at 160 degrees, just sweat my...
Well, this thing says a few degrees from hell. There's a book White Hot Tales from the Badwater Ultra Marathon. That doesn't sound fun.
Oh, I mean,
that sounds like some hustle.
That's funny. Yeah, it actually, when I first started off, I didn't like to run to the end of my street. Like, it's like amazing when I look back to where I used to orient myself. And I mean, I ran in middle school and high school, but always I would finish towards the back of the group, like always. And for me, I just kept on, it's something I enjoyed, and I just kept on chiseling away at it, like kept on hustling day,
yep,
week, month. And I broke my neck in 2004. That was another major, like, you know, for a lot of people, you would think like, okay, maybe that's actually going to knock you down pretty rough and cause you to maybe take a step back. But for me, breaking my neck was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it really opened my eyes to the mindset and like how you can you can achieve just anything on the planet, I believe, with a relentlessness and a strong plan. And, you know, so things that I loved, like running, I kind of pushed it to the next level. And so I just kept on pushing.
I'd say that's like 18 level. That's like big boss level.
It was something wild. Like, I ended up breaking my neck. And 10 years later, I won the Badwater race to the month of breaking my neck.
So, and you won this Badwater race.
Holy shit.
Holy crap.
I didn't know you won it.
God,
I don't know much about this. I couldn't tell you the past winners.
I'd be picked up after like a mile and a half, probably. I'd be like, hey, come and get me. Come and bring your car.
You're talking about like,
golly,
a collection of the largest sociopaths on earth when it comes to like running. Just,
dude, I'm looking at them, dude. Some of these people are in just stupid shape. Look at these guys.
I know. It's crazy. So you're like the baddest.
Dude, there's like Navy SEALs probably.
You know, I think David Goggins probably the most widely known ultra runner today.
Yeah.
He does other.
Might be a picture of him right here.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's going to be running the race this summer as well. There's like 90 of us, 99 of us.
He didn't want to say it, but he's going to.
No, you know, I like David. He's a good guy. I like his, he puts his fire into things, and you know, so I'm looking forward to like competing with him.
See, yeah. I get to hang out with like old high school wrestlers a lot. I'm going to drop it again. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got that, no, don't take this the wrong way, but they have a bit of crazy in their eyes.
Yeah.
Like they're very, not passive, but they're very like, it's like there's a humility to it, but there's a look in the eye, like don't piss this person off. And you've kind of got that look in your eye. Like I can tell you can get into places where other human beings don't want to get into when it comes to like pushing yourself.
Yeah. It's kind of wild because, my students don't ever see that side. Like, most people don't see it unless they're actually at the events I do. Because normally I'm just very relaxed and chill, mm-hmm. But I definitely get into a different mindset when we're competing in that level. And I love competing against Navy SEALs or whoever else.
It gives you motivation. Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're like, yeah. Oh, Navy SEAL, we're going to find out.
No, but I'm looking at him and I can see it. Like there's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
There's a seriousness to it.
Yeah. Like a little competitive.
He is relaxed and cool as he is right now. I can see it. Like,
well, it's almost like the Zen thing awesome. You got going on. It's almost this focus. Like you could probably, you just get in that zone. And to me, I'm always talking to myself in my head, you know? Mm-hmm. So if I'm running, I'm constantly like, and that's probably like, how do you get in that state to run? I mean, I'm reading this thing. You have to qualify. In order to qualify, you have to have run 3 races of 100 contiguous miles or longer, at least one of them in the last 24 months. And it says officially finishing the 81-mile Badwater Salton Sea race counts as one 100-mile race for qualifying purposes. That's like, because it's so hot, like 81 miles is like the equivalent of 100 if you were.
Yeah, that's it's a hot one. But yeah, so this ultra is unique because of that heat. I mean, it's like literally the hottest place on the planet. It actually got up to 134 degrees.
Goodness.
One time in the 20th century.
I was in Dubai and that sucked.
Yeah, it is warm in Dubai. It's a beautiful place too. But yeah, it's incredible. And there's, you meet phenomenal people that, like I mentioned, David Goggins, but there's people like, this fellow, Chris Moon. Yeah. He runs with one arm and one leg. Like he's a special forces from the UK and he had, a mine that was detonated on him. And it's just phenomenal to see someone who can push themselves to run 135 miles with one leg and one arm. Like, I mean,
that's crazy. Look at this. You know, if you do a Google search, who's that guy down there? There he is.
You got what's his name?
There he is. He's like one of the winners. There you are. Harvey Sweetland Lewis.
Yeah. So it's kind of wild going back, but I kind of think it could relate to our listeners, your listeners, because, you know, whatever they want to pursue, you know, where they're at today, they can go so much further with it. You know what I mean? Like whether you're starting a business, you're starting whatever it is, your side hustle, you know what I mean? How far that can explode is amazing.
Oh, wait a minute. You were born in Wheeling, West Virginia?
I was.
I used to drive through Wheeling on my way because I went to school in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Wait, are you a Steelers fan?
Well, no.
Hey, you talking about ice festivals. They get a great, every year they've got a great, like, ice festival or whatever, right? You might not have. How long were you there?
Only until I was four.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you don't remember. But they've got this Okeechobee or Oka something forest or whatever. And you can drive through it and it's really cool in the winter or whatever. Oh, cool, man. So originally West Virginia. Nice. So you've been all over the place, too. I mean, you got Minnesota, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Cleveland, right? Or was it Cleveland or is it?
Yeah, it is Berea.
Berea, okay.
Right outside Cleveland.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Wow, you've been all over the place. Wait, who is your NFL team? Do you even pay attention to them? Because, I mean, they're lesser athletes than you are. I mean,
No way. You know, actually, growing up in Berea, we had the Cleveland Browns training facility there.
Oh,
so I used to see Ozzie Newsome running around and, like, you know, I'd see all the players. So I always loved the Browns. And when Art Modell moved the Browns to Baltimore, then I stopped watching NFL altogether. So I only watched, I used to watch every single game to that point, every game. I couldn't even like live without watching the Sunday game. But since then, I watched maybe one game a year.
Well, then before then, they were awesome. Like they, 86, 87, they were a fumble and a drive away from two Super Bowls back to back. They were always with the Bengals, with Bernie Kosar. They're always like Webster Slaughter. And
you remember those names? Yeah.
Who was it? McNeil was one of the corner.
Metcalf.
Hannaford Dixon was a cornerback. He was pretty badass. Clay Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The original.
Kevin Mack.
Kevin Mack, the Mack truck.
Yeah, Kevin Mack was no joke.
No,
yeah.
That's some history there.
Man, this is awesome. So here you are. Yeah, I mean, you click on the Badwater Ultra Marathoners, and there you are. You're like the man right there.
So does it 282 feet below seawater, does that mess with you at all? Like, is there extra gravity, or is that just me being stupid?
You don't feel any difference. It's just you're in this salt flat. So you're sitting in a bowl of heat. So it's even warmer the lower you are right there. It's incredibly hot.
Does that take all the sweat out of here?
It does. It's like there's like such low humidity. And then so when you sweat, you don't realize it because it just evaporates immediately. Like you get salt.
They said that's one of the things you got to watch out for when you're like in deserts and things like that, because you can dehydrate.
You can definitely. And unfortunately, every year, not in our race, but there's people who go out to Death Valley and they don't realize this, you know, significance of that kind of heat. And so every year they lose people that, you know, die from like the heat. You know, you got to be very careful with what you're doing.
Is that where Burning Man is?
No, that is out more in Utah. It's out in Utah.
That's kind of cool because they build that city every year or whatever that just pops up. That's kind of cool. Yeah. Well, is this where they filmed?
It's Utah, but it's not Death Valley.
Okay.
This looks like where they filmed, what's it called?
Mad Max.
No, maybe Mad Max or like, what's his name that was like, I'm running.
Forrest Gump.
Forrest Gump. Yeah. I don't know why I couldn't remember his name.
Right.
This looks like the place they filmed Forrest Gump. Like when you look at some of these scenes of these guys.
Dude, like, how often in the middle of that were you like, I'm tired. I want to go home now.
Yeah, I do, no times, like zero times. Like, no, I mean, I am tired. And like, there are times where I'm like, why am I doing this? And it's like, anytime you have a negative thought, you just have to like switch it around. Mm-hmm. You have to like get rid of it. And with this race, you actually have a team of four people who come along and hand off drinks to you. every mile. And so it's like, it's I always choose people on my team, in my circle, that are positive minded people. Like you cannot have like the negative thought. You have to like get rid of that right away. You cannot, it doesn't exist. Like even when I'm running, I will like, if I'm running up the mountain, which is like 16 miles up a mountain, that's like 5,000 feet. It's a lot of climbing.
Say that again.
It's like 16 miles up a 5,000 foot mountain. I will like be thinking maybe I'm on a bicycle, or I'll be thinking that I'm like going down the hill or whatever. I'll just put like it, use my imagination to deal with the difficulty.
It's a powerful imagination.
Like, or you think, well, you only focus on the next telephone pole. Like you only focus on small increments, because it's you can manage that small increment. But like to think about, when you start, I'm going to actually end up 135 miles away, 16,000 feet of climbing, and I'm going to end up on the tallest mountain on the lower 48. Like that's, it's almost overwhelming. So you really want to break it down into smaller increments. And there's power to that.
So you start 282 feet below sea level and you end at an elevation of 8,360 feet.
Yeah,
that's a big difference.
It is over, because you have to go up over three mountains, and it's got such incredible sights along the journey. I mean, actually, the Air Force flies their fighter jets like right there as they're and they train every year. We're doing the race; they'll like just buzz over top of us, and they get buzzed by a fighter jet like 60 meters above you. And they just like tilt their plane. And they do it especially to oftentimes to the runners are in the front like of the all the runners by the time we get to the place where they are. So I mean every year I get buzzed at least once. I mean it's such a rush.
And you're like, they're going way faster than me. If I was in one of those things, this race would be over in 3 seconds.
Exactly. So how do you like train for the elevation? Because that's at least, 10 miles above a mile high.
Yeah, so it's kind of wild. Like, from Cincinnati, a lot of people wonder, well, how are you successful? I mean, with this race, I finished in the top. I finished second place and third place. In the last 6 years, I think I've been on the podium, like, four of the last 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and this year.
In just this race?
Just this particular race. Yeah, in just this race. And, I mean, I'd love to win the race this year. I'm, like, putting all my, everything into it.
I'm sorry I brought you that Starbucks Frappuccino.
Oh, no worries.
I just knocked you back three places.
I ended up giving it to our student.
Okay, hey, there you go. Well, good.
I was so mad. But no, I really appreciate that Starbucks. The Cincinnati has these phenomenal hills. I mean, we do. We're the Seven Hills, the city of Seven Hills.
I've been telling people this is why we have good athletes here, like football players and stuff like that, because when you're a kid, you always got to go up and down these hills. Like, if you walk, like we used to walk or catch the bus, but, a lot of times you just walk, and you got to go up and down these hills constantly.
Absolutely. There's a lady who even wrote a book about it. Like there's over Cincinnati is famous for all the stairs.
The city stairs, they got rid of some of them.
About 400 stairs all across Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And because, in the 19th century, we were a pedestrian city. We're the largest city in the West, the sixth biggest city in the country. And people just walked everywhere. It's a good healthcare plan.
No, it is a good healthcare plan.
That's why San Francisco is so healthy.
Right. Yeah, well, they got the
hills. Outside of the drug addicts.
They would be healthy if they weren't doing heroin. There you go.
You can't go anywhere where it's flat.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, but I use just be creative. So I ran 10 miles today. Like this was, I ran over.
When?
Here. Yeah, this morning. Like I ran, and a lot of times I kind of like include like errands with my runs. Like,
yeah.
So it gives me motivation to get there. And so I've been running back and forth to school every day now for, this will be my eighth year of like running every day. There's a couple times where I've kayaked, or I even swam one time down the Ohio River.
I'm afraid to swim that Ohio River, man.
It's some like wild animals in there. Yeah, last spring I kayaked from Columbus down to Cincinnati. That's 250 miles. It was beautiful. Like I saw like about 25 bald eagles. Like in the process of going from Columbus to Cincinnati.
That's cool.
How long did that take you?
It took me just under 5 days. It's beautiful. Like, people wouldn't realize how gorgeous, like, 98% of the Scioto and Ohio River are just green space. I mean, there's all kinds of, like, coyotes and beavers and amazing.
What was fish in the Ohio River?
You mean, like, actually in the water?
No. Yeah, I don't know. Did anything swim by you or touch it?
I had, like, these, like, garfish. They've, like, got long, pointy nose.
Yeah.
They're really cool to look at. I mean, they're really neat. Like, there's sturgeon, too, in the Scioto. I haven't seen any sturgeon yet, but that would be really neat to see.
Those are big.
Anybody's a pet alligator?
Yeah. Well, apparently there was one a few years back.
Somebody put one in there? Yeah.
Someone put one in the Ohio River. But
well, then, you know, those bull sharks can swim up to, like, 2,500 miles or something. Yeah, they get to St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Is that as far as they can go, generally?
As far as they say they reported it, so.
Oof. Yeah. Ooh, you never know, because that river pretty dark in Jersey.
Yeah, it was like maybe like 14 years ago. I was doing the Ironman then, and I'd swim in the Ohio River a couple times a week. I don't think there was anyone else who was doing it back then.
No.
Yeah, but there's a cleaner area up above the 275, like near Coney Island. There's a lot of boats that go up there. You can, like, find a pretty good area.
Nice.
But
okay.
So I run back and forth to school just because of time. Like, you think about, like, your time and where you have time. We're always so busy.
For yourself.
For myself. But it, like, versus being in my car.
Ooh,
you know, it's
point.
Like, it's multitasking. Like, you know, I'm able to, you know, train, but also commute in the same, you know, thing. And then it also keeps
meditate in a way too.
Meditate as well.
See the city.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I would encourage people to, like, you know, I know a lot of, like, the podcast is driven towards, you know, how to make your side hustle, make money. But, and I believe in that wholeheartedly, but also the way we look at, my philosophy is kind of, I look at health a lot. Like, I think about, like, the quality of life, and, you know, making a lot of money is not necessarily mean, you know, happiness.
Because you can be sick with a lot of money, and it's not going to be worth anything. I mean,
so, you know, like, your jiu-jitsu class today you took, right, Kyle? You got that. Like, it's like that creates a level of balance in your life in addition to those things. So I think I can get on a side tangent with that. But, you know, the run commuting helps me a lot. And then when I leave here today, I'm going to probably go do about 5 or 6 hills up and down Mount Abs on the way home. So it's just training, like, in the hills we have, and use it like it's in that area.
Wow.
So do you have, like, a loop you do around Mount Abs, or you go up and then you come back down the same way?
I'll probably come. Actually, I'll probably do, like, there's another road down from that called Kemper that goes up to Eden Park.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go down there, start from the bottom and go all the way up to the top, like, where Eden Park is. And I'll, like, go back up and down, like, 4 or 5 times. You know, and this is my easier day. Like, like, a harder day will be, like, on Saturday or Sunday, where I have more time to do a longer break, and I'll maybe go to, like, Tar Hollow State Park or Great Seal, and I'll go run, like.
People always leave. I know a ton of people who have left because they're outdoorsy, right? A buddy of mine just moved to Knoxville. My wife's brother moved to, because he likes to climb.
Right.
He moved to Colorado. Actually, I've got 3 people that I know that have moved to. Mike Klein. Actually, a friend of mine who actually went to SCPA, Melissa's cousin or Melissa's brother, and, my friend Lindsay, they'd all moved because they're outdoorsy people. And they go out to Colorado because they said there's nowhere in Cincinnati to be outdoorsy. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, there's an entire state just across the river that is nothing but outdoorsy. I mean, you're talking about, like, I mean, look at the tunnel, well, not the tunnels, the caves, the gorge.
Yeah.
But then you've got the longest, you got the longest cave system in, like, America down there.
Oh, yeah, down and down.
Mammoth Caves and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have some phenomenal places in Cincinnati, near Cincinnati, in Ohio. Like, I mean, in Cincinnati, we have Mount Airy Forest, which is one of the biggest
urban forest. It's second biggest, right next to Central Park.
Right, in the whole country. And so you could go out there, and they now have a mountain bike path too. Like, it's all built up. I mean, and then if you go out in Ohio, like, we've got some beautiful state parks that are, like, you get out there and you don't even see people. In some of those places, like Tar Hollow or Scioto Trail.
It's like Little Miami and stuff like that. There's some cool stuff there.
Such great places. Yeah.
So I don't know why people don't know more about it. I feel like, I don't know, Ohio's done a terrible job of marketing or something. And then right. Cincinnati alone, I think we're like world renowned or something, but for our parks.
Right.
Because there was a guy, I think he did it in Kansas City too. And when I went to Kansas City, I was like, yeah, this looks like a Cincinnati park. And it was a guy who came in here and he designed this whole park system mm-hmm. in Cincinnati. But we got some great parks. I mean, a lot of green space. Yeah. I think Price Hill has the biggest tree canopy in Ohio. That's or something amazing. Like that as a neighborhood, yeah. right?
It's amazing.
And even, what was it? Winston Churchill said that Cincinnati was the most beautiful inland city. And I think, was he the one who dubbed it the Queen of the West, the yeah. Queen City of the West?
Well, he said that statement.
Yeah.
About the,
it was, absolutely. Yeah, it was so beautiful and all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I love to travel. So, like, for me, Cincinnati is my launching pad. Like, in the... you know, one of my big dreams is to go to all the countries on the planet.
Nice.
And I shared with you about Latin America, and every year I've just like, I would like choose one at least, or more. And, prior to the pandemic, I had just hit my 100th country that I've traveled to. Yeah. So,
If my wife was here, she'd be asking a million billion questions right now. Cause that's her goal too.
Yeah. I love it. I feel like, just so like free when I'm like in some other place, and I'm like just I feel like I'm just a sponge, like soaking up like
it opens your mind to us. Yeah,
but then when I come back, I'm so thankful to come back to Cincinnati. Like I really love the place. Like I appreciate all kinds of aspects about our city, and it's a great launching pad. Like I love living here. But I also love to get away from here too.
Yeah. Times, well, know? It's funny that we live in a city where they're like some of the best marketers in the world live, you know, with Procter & Gamble and everything else. But we've done a terrible job, I feel like, just marketing the city itself because it's crazy underrated. I mean, the food scene here is underrated. For runners, I mean, this is a great place to train.
Oh, yeah. And the Flying Pig Marathons like meant like worlds to the city. I mean, it's really made running a mecca. For Cincinnati. Like, I mean, you should maybe have the race director come on here and share her
insights. Oh, yeah. It'd be like great.
The pig. But it's amazing because it's gotten so many people involved with running that had no previous interest in running. I mean, from walking, they have 5K programs, you know, all kinds of things. So it's increased the health of our community. Like, there's in
that's a good point.
It really has. Like, I mean, when I first came here, I never saw people out really running on the weekends that much or walking. I mean, a little bit. But
you're right.
That,
no.
Back in 1998, I wasn't seeing it that much.
No, there wasn't.
But then you saw, like, by the 2005, you know, there were groups of people, like, getting out on it. And now, if you go any weekend, you go anywhere in the city on a Saturday or Sunday prior to, like, the pig, you're seeing, like, 20 people, 30 people, 50 people running over here and there.
Well, people feel safer downtown now than when I was a kid. I remember when I was a kid, it was like, you didn't, I did, of course, because I went to school down there, but right. People didn't come downtown. Like, people stayed in their little cul-de-sac or their burb or whatever in the world it was.
But in the burbs, it's better now. Like, there's more people
there is.
Involved. And you're right, because I used to have to go to the public library to use the microfiche.
Yeah.
And I would be on my P's and Q's, like, ready.
That was my spot, man, the library.
I was ready to rock. I was just, I'm gonna hit them and run.
Our students do not know what that is.
No. Well, crime's also down. I mean, if you look at crime in general in America from the 90s, like when we were growing up to now, I mean, it's just going straight down. Like, I think over time, things just get better and better and better. You know, I mean, you know, progress, right? Like, right. Progress is being made. But yeah, I mean, that's a good point. There's a lot more people active out running. And
yeah, the progress is the proof's in the pudding. Because if you look at, I've been looking at my age, like in my people in my age group and comparing it to my parents, what their groups look like. No offense to anybody who's listening, but it's true. And especially my grandparents, when they hit 40, it was over. Mm-hmm. Like, they looked like they were with 60.
They were exhausted.
They look like 70. Well, they look like 65, 70 year olds now. Mm-hmm. And if you look at high school yearbooks, like I would always look at my dad's high school yearbook. The teachers, everybody just looked older.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody looks so much better. I think that has a lot to do with what he's talking about. More people are walking, more people are running. I mean, hate to say it, but, you know, CrossFit did a lot for people too.
Yeah, well, there's a fiend. Like, people gym, that are insane about CrossFit. This is funny that you're saying this because I just sent this to a friend of mine, Becky. And it's a picture of, who is it? Oh man.
Kyle Stevie.
Where is it at? Oh my God. It was a picture. It said, oh yeah, here it is. It said, this is how all meat is no longer available. Why not? Oh yeah. This is how 20-year-olds looked in 19 and 28-year-olds looked in 1980.
That's
what they looked like. That's how a 28-year-old looked in 1980.
Well, who just died? The actor from, he was in Midnight Run with Robert De Niro.
It's a great film.
Yeah, he was a guy that was wanted for tax fraud. And in that movie, he's like 35 years old and he looks like a 50-year-old now on TV. Like guys just looked so much older.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was. Maybe it's just we don't have all these preservatives that we got now. It's just keeping us young, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because our life expectancy in this country is like 78. But, I mean, also our obesity rate has like just
exploded. Out of control.
Like, I mean, if you look back to like 1970, the obesity rate was like 10%.
Going to college campus nowadays.
Yeah, now the obesity rate is like, it depends what state you live in. Like you mentioned Colorado, they have the lowest obesity rate, like 20%. We're at like somewhere around like 38%+ in Ohio. Like, I mean, that's more than
what's Wisconsin.
Yeah. That, I don't recall exactly.
It's up there.
I didn't pay attention, but it was, yeah,
Minnesota
was a big,
yeah.
I think they need to gauge the, I know most of it's based off of BMI, and I really think that's a bad judge of character. I think what I would like to know more, like hip to waist ratio, because that generally shows you like the poor health if it's like a 1-to-1 or whatever, or greater than 1-to-1 where your stomach or your belly button is and against your hips. It's a better precursor for like heart disease and cancers and things like that. Mm-hmm. BMI, I mean, I'm approaching morbid obesity with BMI just because of my height and weight.
Yeah, you're a stocky dude though. Like you got some like thick bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a thick chest. And I got You know, I mean,
you're big boned.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we're really talking about you.
No, but people that look like me are being captured in that obesity.
It's not a real way to.
They created that in the 1700s as a study in Belgium. For the king, well, I guess they are all King Leopold there, right? So King Leopold or whatever, so that he could judge the health of his nation for obesity. But it's supposed to be like a big population thing, which you're talking about. But at the same time, a lot more people I feel like a lot more people have been working. There's a lot more muscle now. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of fat people. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people that are like, that dude's obese or she's obese. And that's a huge, because that's going to crush our.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was going to say, how do you feel about that? Like body positivity thing? Like,
yeah.
I think it's good in a way. Cause it's like, hey, look, this is how you are, whatever. But at the same time, I think you can encourage people.
I don't want to be offensive to anyone at all. Like, it's mainly like, I used to be actually a really big kid, like growing up, like I was the second biggest kid in my school up through like middle school. And so, I think I can relate, a bit in that regard. Like, I'm careful about how I present it. Like, but I'm just saying it's a concern that we have, for an individual, I think. Like, it's, if you are experiencing like, you know, significant obesity, it's really makes it tough in life. I mean, to have that good quality of life. So, I mean, getting resources and getting active is so important. And like, we could talk about a million things regarding that, from nutrition to, culture to like, food deserts, things like that. There's a
lack of education.
Lack of education.
People are still eating the standard American diet.
Well, I think too, the body positivity thing, I think the goal with that should be something like, hey, don't make fun of people and put them down for the way they're built. But at the same time, don't encourage them to live an unhealthy lifestyle.
I thought the best one they had going was in the mid-2000s. And it was Strong as the New Skinny. And it had all these powerful women on, like different sizes. Like, you know, some were like 125 pounds and just shredded. Some were like, you know, like the Serena Williams type. They were thick and they were healthy looking. And I don't know where that part of it went away, because that's not, those aren't, those body types aren't completely unattainable.
It's encouraging people to be
strong.
Strong.
Work out. Get out there. Yeah. I was a fat kid too, so I know this oh so well, and I was made fun of terribly growing, because I went in, I was in school in Newport, and I was with a lot of kids from rough upbringings, and if you had something that they could get on you for, they got on you for it.
Oh yeah.
And so yeah, I know all about it, but at the same time, it's kind of like, we got a crisis on our hands, and it ain't COVID. It's gonna really wreck our health system here, because these people are going to be needing long term care for a long time.
It is a major issue, and when you go to other countries, like you're in like the Netherlands, or you're in Portugal, there's no comparison. Like, I mean, you don't see that being a big factor.
No, in Italy, everybody's in skinny jeans. Right. It looks great.
Comparison. I mean, so it's just, we become kind of static, in our lifestyles here, more static, overall. And so much food is processed. We rely on like fast food. It's something that is really important. And so, I think financial literacy, we actually talked about health today and financial literacy, because I think there's a real relationship, between, quality of life and, incorporating, your health into that bigger picture.
Well, not only that too, like the better you look, I mean, there's fact, this is facts. The tall people get paid more on average than short people. The people who are in shape get paid more than people who are overweight. Like, I mean, there's just this correlation. And as much as people would like to say, oh, it's wrong and all this other stuff, human nature, like it's just, people are attracted to, for whatever reason, to people who look healthy, who look strong, who, they feel like would represent their company best, right?
Healthy people also like miss less days because they don't get sick as often.
And there's that, right? And that may be subconscious. That may not even be something you think about when you're sitting in an interview, but there's a lot of subconscious things that are probably being processed in your head when you see someone who's in shape, tall, good looking, and they're going for a sales job.
I like how you looked at me the whole time you said that.
Right in his eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not saying it's fair, but I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like, definitely not that fair.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying.
It's not always intentional,
right?
But the rules are laid out. Everybody knows them. So, like, you can do something to, not everybody's going to walk around like Men's Fitness guy. We're like,
right, sure, no. Yeah, we can't all be Harvey Lewis, but we can be half a Harvey Lewis and still be in shape.
No.
I can be a third of a Harvey Lewis and I'd still be in great shape, I think.
You can get rid of Muffin Top.
Yeah. Which I need to work on that.
Yeah, I know. I'm not an expert at that. Trust me.
Pringles and Skyline Chili. But what's some of the things, like we talked about this previously, but you're taking people out, like you're taking people on trips, and you're it's not like you're just going on these trips by yourself. I mean, there's
right. So I wanted to take people on holidays. I had this dream of like, well, okay, I want to incorporate hiking and running and take people to like somewhere like we decide Portugal. And just take them to the most amazing places in Portugal, have like all the experiences with local villages, but doing it like as an active vacation. So I came up with this idea for Run Quest Travel. And, you could say this is like my side hustle.
This is the side hustle.
You're right. But so it's not, we've been doing trips since 2014, and I traditionally do one trip a year. I was planning to do two in 2020, but we had to cancel because of COVID. We were going to do one trip to the Azores and one trip to the mainland Portugal. But it's just, phenomenal. I ended up partnering up with a guy who is, something amazing. His name is Carlos Saw. He actually, he's one of the most well-known runners in Europe and probably the most well-known runner in Portugal for sure. But he does race organization and work, it does a lot of things with bringing people to the country and doing trips. So we partnered up on this, and it's been phenomenal. I've enjoyed so much of it. Like the guests that we've had, I would say probably half of them say it's the best trip they've ever taken in their life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so competitors in the marketplace, when I was first looking at this, like, it's sort of a nuance. Like, there's not that many groups out there taking people on running and hiking holidays. But I was looking at like REI or like National Geographic. They do like trips where you can do like a hiking journey, you know, and like the cost of what they do or to purchase a trip like they have is like maybe $6,000 or more.
Wow.
And our trips have been $2,450.
So crazy attainable for most people.
Does that include airfare?
It doesn't include airfare, but it includes everything from when they get off the plane. And so it's really amazing. Like, we don't stay at just like the Holiday Inn. We actually stay at like, in that, not, no offense to Holiday Inn, but we stay at like one of a kind, really 4 stars or better hotels.
It's an experience, right?
You don't want to experience. And so we have phenomenal guides. I've had pretty much the same guides ever since the beginning. These are people that are like bilingual. They're really knowledgeable about the country. They're enthusiastic, and it's really like a food vacation almost, because we're always eating something phenomenal every meal. We go to these really beautiful restaurants, and Portugal is known for its food. So we really just hike or run so we can eat more.
It's known for pastel de nata, which I ate probably 400 of those when I was there.
Oh man,
those things are so good. They're little custard tarts.
Pastel is like it's cakes, right?
It's like a little crust. It's like a tiny little pie, but it's filled with custard and it's like brown on top. We actually learned how to make them, and then Francesina.
Oh yeah,
which is like it's just a bunch of meat and bread. And then there's like cheese on top and a bunch of like French fries.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It is something like that. The best I eat year round is when I'm in Portugal.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, they just have such an incredible passion for cuisine. And you have like the blend of like the Mediterranean and Northern Africa.
That's
like
true. And Southern in like Lisbon and
the influence of like some of their former, colonies, from Mozambique to Angola. And it's just really something special.
Yeah, the northern part, like near Porto, like they were never really conquered by the Moors. Mm. So they're like, if you want to experience like real Portuguese historic, that's, you go north.
Are they north of the mountains? Because the mountains kind of kept the Moors from getting all the way to the North Sea. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is the North Sea up there? Is that the north?
No. North Sea's up by Scandinavia.
Yeah. So what's the north side of?
You mean like the Pyrenees Mountains between France and Spain?
Those kind of run like north, northwest to southeast. These ran east to west.
Yeah, there is a
by Basque Country and all that other stuff up around there.
Oh, that's Spain. Yeah,
reach all the way across.
It might have. Though? Yeah.
Yeah, there are some mountains that they have a national park, Jerez. It's really, really stunning, very mountainous, wild horses. We usually always see like wild horses and goats. And
I bet they couldn't drag you away, huh?
Oh, man.
Bad joke.
Yeah, so it's really just something special. So we have usually like one guide for every 5 guests.
Mm-hmm.
And this year we are still up in the air because right now we're waiting for the Portuguese government to announce what are the plans for the summer. And so, for example, last Saturday, every Saturday they make announcement. Last Saturday they said they're opening travel to all of Europe. So my friend Carlos, he thinks that they're going to open travel for Americans either this Saturday or the Saturday after. But we're hoping to do our trip the last week of June. So I might have to cancel this year. It's not been a world for me at all. Because again, this is like not my full time thing. But I'm hoping that we can, that Portugal will, the government will say, you know, we're opening things up, especially with Americans having, you know, more than half the population has had the vaccine already. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one of the criteria for traveling will likely be that you have had to have the vaccine and you have to have a negative COVID test. It's just kind of going to be the reality for the summer. Mm. But that's not really a big deal at all.
Yeah, you right.
Know, if we can get there, it'll be great.
How many people normally go to this with you? I mean, how many people do you host?
So we had 16 people signed up for each of those weeks. But because of COVID, I'll probably hope to take a smaller group this year. I canceled the Azores trip already for this year just because it was just too much uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking maybe like 12 or 14 people, like that would be great. Cause it's just about getting back into the system, like the regimen of doing it,
yeah.
You know, and take people, you know, that are like, oh, you know, I don't mind the spontaneity of buying my flight 2 weeks before. It's okay
for yeah. me. You know, well, especially that's a short flight to Portugal. Right. I mean, you generally have to go down to Atlanta and then head over up it's to New York
really
or something.
Short flight. Yeah.
It is.
Believe it or not, people don't realize it, but it's just a hop from here to like, JFK or Boston.
And then from there, it's
like 5 hours and a half, maybe.
Like I think from like Miami to Portugal is closer than Miami to LA or something like
absolutely.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not far. It's like yeah, 4 hours. Maybe time zone ways. It's like 5 hours.
With the jet stream, it's faster on the way there.
Yeah.
On the way back.
Oh, it takes 6 hours or something. Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with cartography too, because I think that they make the Atlantic look so much closer in size to the Pacific and it's just not.
Yeah.
This is like 5 hours from Los Angeles to Hawaii.
That's crazy.
And Hawaii's nice. Right in the middle of the Pacific
right.
Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, this is interesting. So what is what do you hope people get out of this, or what do you want this to become? Like, I mean, this is sounds like small groups right now, which is nice, intimate, allows you guys to probably talk to everybody and really start building relationships with people. Right. But like, what do you want to see this become? Do you want to see this grow, or are you okay with it where it's at now?
You know, when I first started in 2014, I had this idea of making it like my full-time thing. But I'd say probably a year into like, you know, thinking through that, I was kind of like, I really like teaching right now. And I like the idea of doing this like forever. Like I my friend Carlos and I, we joke that, you know, when we're in our 60s or, you know, later than that, maybe even we're going to both be laughing, taking people on, you know, holidays in Portugal and, you know, be phenomenal. So I would just love to continue with it. There is a possibility that I might want to, you know, add trips. Like the Azores was an additional trip that we were planning for 2020, and we want to make that like become a permanent trip. So I'm just very slow, gradual. I'm conservative. You know, it's like my running. It took me a long time to get to the level where I am now.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I chipped away at a long time. So I'm kind of conservative with what I do. And I've got my times kind of spread out, you know, in addition to like family and friends, you know, I do a lot of training, as you see, and teaching, and, you know, so there's only so much time. And so I'm like, I'm kind of a little bit interested in possibly at someday, maybe doing something more where I'm doing like 20 trips a year.
Yeah.
You know, because I have a lot of insights to different places from my travels, and I really value customer service. Like when I do things for this, is like I put a lot of passion into it. I want I really think through like the restaurants we're going through to, you know, I find out like what are the best restaurants in Porto. You know, what can we do to make this the
that's
most?
That's what I try to figure out too. Yeah,
experience.
It's hard to find a bad restaurant. Like it
well,
is.
Well, it is in Porto, but you can find some that are just like there are the wow, and there's like. Wow.
Yeah.
This is something remarkable. So I really seek out those kind of places and Carlos having the people on the ground that are really, top notch, that makes all the difference too. You know, so building those relationships with all my guides, who are my, like, they're like family members to me almost, really. So I love that. And then we've also built a relationship with people in Portugal. So every year we come, we actually run in this park in Lisbon, and my friend João, he invites like his running club. They're called the Monsanto Running Club. No relationship.
No relation to the,
yeah. These guys have like this squirrel as their logo. But yeah, it's amazing. They have like 30, 40 people that come out. They all know us. They bring like the custards. They bring like watermelon and like all kinds of things. And they're just so happy to celebrate with us being there as Americans and like having that like connection with Portugal. So, I mean,
I went on my honeymoon in Portugal. So we went, that was one of the places.
Did you go to Sintra?
Yeah. Oh my God. It's crazy. This castle. It's like, I guess it's a castle,
yes,
right?
It is,
yeah.
It is, right?
Just the colors and the town. You get to walk around. There's little shops and stuff. Right. But that's a really cool area.
So neat. You
were
on your honeymoon there.
Yeah.
I love that.
We went all over the place. It was crazy. We Airbnb'd our house. It's in Mount Auburn, right? Not in a great neighborhood. And some guys that were working on a new construction house on Mulberry Street rented our house out for an entire month. It was $4,500. Our entire trip for a month in Europe was $5,500.
Yeah.
For both of us, including the flight. We used a thing, and I don't know if you've ever looked at it, but tripmasters.com. Okay. Tripmasters.com, we went to Porto, we went to Lisbon. I think we went to Lisbon first, we went to Porto. We went to, like, I think it was on the same trip, Nice, obviously Rome, where we got married, Naples and Sicily. Like, we were all over that whole kind of like Western kind of coast area. And it was awesome. It was an amazing trip. You know, got to see a lot of cool stuff. I mean, I love Europe, you know, obviously. And Portugal, it was underrated. We did not think Portugal was going to be the place we heard about. You know, Portugal is a cool place to go. So we're like, all right, you know, we think in Italy is going to be better, France, you know, southern coast of France. No, Portugal was, it stood out.
It's
so underrated.
It does. It is. I mean, it had never been on my radar.
No, you just don't think Portugal, you know?
And Carlos actually had one bad water the year before I did. And so I happened to have a flight. I went to Portugal over my winter break, and I looked him up because I knew he had won the race before me, or won the race back then. And, we just connected. And I was blown away by like the natural beauty of the country. Like, there's so much diversity.
It looks like California.
It does. It really does.
It's pretty much like California, Europe.
But you have the charm of like the European cities from Lisbon to Porto. And then you have like
you don't have the taxes, California. So
the costs are lower in Portugal.
It is. It's affordable. Have you ever thought about just moving there?
There are a lot of Americans that do.
There are.
But, you know, Cincinnati's my home.
Yeah, so yeah. You said this is your headquarters. Back. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's my headquarters too. But I mean, I wouldn't mind living there maybe or 3 months, go down to the Algarve, and maybe like Algarve gets cold though too. It's not like it's like you're not going to Miami.
Yeah, and the Portuguese wine or sangria.
In Porto too. The port wine in Porto. Yeah. That's why it's called port wine, is because of Porto.
And everything is so fresh. I mean,
it is
so fresh.
Real food.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I love going to, Portugal. I'll definitely go back there. But there are. I mean, we looked at it after we got back. We were like, why are we here? Like, what are we doing in America? Like, everybody was nice in Portugal. It's everything you would ever want is there.
Right.
You're on the ocean.
That's what Alice and I have talked about. Like, a lot of people are getting like vacation homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to have a destination that I have to go to. Right, like if you got a vacation home, you got to go make sure it's upkept, and then you got to. But you're basically working on vacation. And I thought, why if we're lucky enough that things that we're trying to get to hit, why wouldn't we do something like that where we're going 2 months to Portugal during the winter here?
And get you can even have a place there. It's easy to buy a place there.
I mean, it's like that. That sounds a lot more attractive to me.
You can actually get citizenship. We looked at it. I think it was if you bought something over $600K. But the problem is it's hard to get a loan there. Like, you'd have to pay cash a lot of times, which would suck. But if you bought something, I think it was over $600K, they would give you citizenship. Or if you start a company and you hired 10 people, which the average person there makes, I think, $400 a month or something. I mean, it's not much at all.
It's higher than
that. Yeah, but it was low. I remember being surprised.
Relative to like Germany and Luxembourg, UK, but it's higher.
Oh, man, it was crazy. But it was like, man, 10 people. So I started adding it up. I was like, that wouldn't be that bad. You know, I mean, you know, and if you have a company, I mean, what I do, advertising agency, you could hire some creative people over there or some copywriters or whatever. Everybody speaks English. And, you know, it's so interesting, too, because part of it looks like San Francisco, too. Like, it's like you get there and you're like, man, this is like California.
Yeah, and then street cars. They have these amazing cobblestones, you know, streets, as you know, like in the sidewalks. I mean, they're all so decorative. Like, everywhere.
The tiles are everywhere. And that came from the Moors, I believe. That came from North Africa and stuff, all the tile work.
Yeah.
But it's all over the place. It's amazing, the mix of culture there. And you do see a lot of more like Arab type of architecture in Lisbon versus Porto.
Right.
It's just a really interesting place. And I mean, we kicked it around, man. We were looking at a place. It was near Foz, you know, where Foz is. It's like the fancy part of Porto.
Yeah.
They call it the fancy part, but it just, I don't know, it looks okay.
Is that like kind of, I can kind of think, is it like between the downtown area and the sea?
It's not far. It's on the water, but it's a little bit, it's more north.
Okay.
It's a F-A-Z is how you pronounce it. They call it Foz, right?
Okay.
But it was a nicer area, and there's a condo, and it was a 3-bedroom condo. And when you walk down on the balcony, there's a street, but the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean's right there. And it was, the lady was asking $600, wasn't in the best of shape, but I was like, wow. You think about how much this would cost if you were in California.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was like a Malibu type of place.
Most definitely.
And a lot of surfers,
even
right?
Even better. The food is way better.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah, exactly. It's, but, yeah. I mean, for a tenth of what it would cost to be in a California. But, again, everybody's nice. You got some awesome countryside, which we didn't get to experience a lot of the countryside. It sounds like you're all over the place.
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time in Lisbon and Porto, but we also go like on the pilgrimage route. There's the famous El Camino.
El Camino, I want to do that.
My mom's doing that.
Is she?
When is she planning to do that?
September.
Wow, that's going to be special. Is she going to go Spain, like the Spanish route?
She's going to be there for 3 months, I think.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's a life experience. Yeah.
That's what my wife keeps wanting to do. We're in this like Catholic business owners group thing, and there's a lot of people in there. Some of the people have actually done it,
right?
And they say the same thing. It's just this life changing thing, and you know,
you should have to see the Emilio Estevez film.
Yeah, I saw that. That was great.
Yeah, I ended up like hanging out with him one night with some friends down in Cincinnati, and he talked a bunch about that film. Like, it meant a lot to him.
Because he got to do it with his dad.
Yeah.
What do you want to leave people with? Like, is there an opportunity for people to get involved in this? Or?
Yeah, I mean, one, you don't have to be like a runner to do our trips. Like, it's hiking.
I was going to ask that. Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. Yeah.
A lot of times we have like one spouse is a runner, one spouse isn't. Like, we have had guests from like 16 up to like 78. So, like, we had a large range. So if you're interested, like, definitely check out our website. It's runquesttravel.com. But my social media is like all under Harvey Lewis Ultra Runner. And I made...
Is that all one word?
Harvey Lewis Ultra Runner, all one word.
Okay.
And I made the Team USA again this year. Like, it's my sixth time on the 24-hour national
team.
Whoa.
That's ridiculous.
So we're competing in Romania.
Which is another beautiful country.
Another beautiful country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's going to be happening in October. And also we have like the World Championship of Backyard Ultras. So this is a whole nother podcast episode, but it's the last person standing. So you keep running a 4.167 mile loop over and over again until the last person survives. Standing. Like, so that's happening.
This is badass stuff. He says it so casually, but this is like,
I'm telling you, nobody can look in his eyes right now, but he's on a different level.
Yeah, you're on a whole new level, Harvey.
That's it. The intensity's different than, like, I look at myself in the mirror, I'm like, you're just a...
No way, man.
Chubby bastard. He's got, like, a look at his eyes.
No.
How many calories can I burn each day if I go on your trip?
The opportunity to eat more food.
There you go. Hey, that's true. Like, you need calories, right?
Yeah, but some people are like, that sounds like punishment. I'd rather go to the beach and, like, hang out, just, you know, sip margaritas. And that's nice sometimes. But these kind of trips, they're experiential. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you actually are going to, like, you're going to leave and have done so many different things and seen different things. So, you know, we rent small vans, and so you're not in some gigantic cargo bus. And you get to like go and experience the life in the village, go to the city, you know, and you get diversity of experience.
Have you ever thought about partnering with like an Airbnb or something? Because that's what they're all about. That's how they're trying to separate themselves from like a hotel,
that's
right?
That's a nice idea.
No, you should totally do that.
I like that idea. That's a good idea.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Well, Harvey, I appreciate you coming down, man. I know Kyle's got to run, and we're definitely going to tell people, everybody go to runquesttravel.com. It's going to be on the podcast page too, a link to it. So everybody needs to go there.
I feel terrible to cut this one short. No. Because this was fascinating.
Oh, dude, we would sit here and talk. We're trying to keep them to an hour, but we're at an hour and a half right now.
Well, I got suckered into being a volleyball coach. I know nothing about
that's
volleyball,
awesome.
But I'm the guy that's got to unlock the gym, but I know how to set up a volleyball net now.
That's impressive.
You got some impressive new skills,
yeah,
Kyle.
Awesome. Yeah,
new skills.
It's going to take me a long ways.
Well, man, this is going to be great. I'd love to post this out and let people know about what's going on.
I can't wait till you whoop David Goggins' ass.
I love this.
He's going to hear this. No,
I doubt it. Hey, I hope he hears it. Post it.
Someone's going to take that and like they're going to play it out with his crew. And like, see, Harvey says he's going to whip your ass. And then it's going to be the last like 50 miles. But I'm going
to. It's gonna be you and Harvey.
It's gonna be him and Harvey,
like trying to battle it out. Oh, I love it.
Say, who was that? Who was that co-host? Who's that fat little?
Who's that guy in Cincinnati? He's gonna come knocking on my door,
like,
looking for you.
Yeah,
I don't want that. I don't want them problems. Well, cool, Harvey.
I'm just kidding, David Goggins.
Yeah,
no, not really. Harvey's gonna smoke you.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, well, Harvey, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming out here. Say hi to the kids for me. You know, I really appreciated my time going in there and being able to talk to them. And anytime you guys need a speaker, we know a lot of people that would love to go in there and talk. So
I would love that.
Awesome.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, Harvey. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.